What I personally like about it is you don't end up with highway projects. People really put forward projects in this process that have never been funded in the past, but should have.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Bike Portland podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Maas. I'm really excited to share an interview I did yesterday with Maria Sippen. I have known Maria and her work for years now. She is a Portland State University urban planning graduate. She worked for a little bit at the Safe Routes to School National Partnership. She worked at the Oregon Department of Transportation as a planner for several years. And right now she's helping a campaign that would actually get participatory budgeting to become an official part of how the city of Portland allocates its funding. If you don't know anything about participatory budgeting, this is an episode where you will learn about it. You can also see a post I've done on Bike Portland today, just now, actually. So now is the time to learn about this interesting, exciting new way of allocating funds. And I couldn't think of anybody better to talk about it than Maria Sippen. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. Welcome, everybody, into the shed. My guest today is Maria Sippen. She is a community organizer. She's worked in transportation as a transportation planner. She's currently working on operations and communications for Participatory Budgeting Oregon. Thanks for being in here, Maria. Welcome to the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
I think I would like to start with the question that you're probably really tired of answering, but hopefully someday we won't have to ask it. But could you just give folks a sort of brief idea of what the heck participatory budgeting is?
Participatory budgeting is a tool for direct democracy. It gives people power over a portion of the public budget. And the definition of PB in the city of Portland that we're trying to achieve here via initiative petition and ballot measure is having participatory budgeting over a portion of the general fund.
Okay, so a specific part of the general fund would be something that the people of Portland would have direct control over, right?
Yes, the people of Portland can directly decide how to spend 2% of City of Portland's general fund. And 2% is what we estimate to be about $15.6 million starting in 2026.
And just today, am I right that you launched the official like petition gathering effort to get this actually on the petition on the ballot in Portland so that it becomes something that is actually part of the city budget code?
That's correct. Earlier this year, it's become official, but we are starting to launch our marketing campaign, our official campaign, and all of our communications to make this widely known.
Wow. Okay. So Portland, people should know that Portland isn't necessarily breaking any new ground here in terms of using participatory budgeting. This is something that's been used all over the place. I even saw that the EU itself has some measure of the European Union budget go in the hands of its own citizens. And I know a lot of other large West Coast cities already have participatory budgeting in effect, right? So is there a reason why Portland's just getting into this now, or can you tell me something about why the time is right for Portland, or what is spurring this effort locally at this point?
You've done your homework. Participatory budgeting has been active around the world for like 30 years.
Wow, okay.
And in U.S. cities, we have about a dozen U.S. cities where PB is alive and well. So Portland is the last major West Coast city that gets to decide if we will adopt PB as part of our charter. So we're a little behind in that regard, but we think 2024 is the time. We have elections happening this year, so it's an ideal year to bring people to the ballot. And we think Portlanders are ready to take charge of the public budget like this. And we have all kinds of indicators that tell us that it's time. But PB isn't new to Portland. We've been working on this as a city in all kinds of ways since 2011. And we've even had city council members who have campaigned using PB but have not followed through on those promises.
So don't people already have power over budgets by voting in their elected officials that decide on it, or showing up at meetings and putting their little dots on the things they like and telling city staff what they want to have funded? I mean, how is it materially different to have a city with PB or to work on a PB budget versus what we have now.
You and I have served on committees ourselves and also serve as advocates to talk about a lot of the things that are important to us and have mobilized people to take action. We have elected people who can champion certain things in transportation, like biking and walking, safe routes to school, etc. But electing people into these government positions is another form of democracy, which is representative democracy. But it's not direct democracy. It's nice to champion these people and also try to rely on them to push forward community priorities, but it's not guaranteed. And when we do things through participatory budgeting, it is a way we can exercise our power as people in Portland without relying on certain people championing priorities or making promises that they'll carry something out during their term. And we've seen in cities that have successfully implemented PB, cycle after cycle, that people get projects that they really care about and the city implements them within a time frame that's clear. And the vote in PB is what makes things legally binding. We can ask our elected officials to take action, but it doesn't really require them to do something within a given amount of time. So it's the legally binding aspect of PB that really can demonstrate people's power and government's ability to implement something that the people want.
And I know that you are aware of, I'm sure, like the pitfalls that can happen in some community-oriented processes where the people who are really good at making noise and people who are really good at speaking or showing up are the ones that sometimes might have like an outsized influence on those conversations. So are there things that you all have worked on or, you know, sidebars that you're putting in your approach that makes sure that, you know, that everybody's voices are, can be as equally heard as possible?
Don't get me wrong. People making noise is a great thing. We've been able to see awesome things in Portland accomplished because people really stand up for these values and they consistently show up either as individuals or coalitions. The current model of government we have now still makes so much room for people to be able to be loud and effective. But what we're seeing is so many corporate interests controlling city council or the direction of government. And it doesn't allow room for Portlanders all over the city to be able to be heard and for the interests to be accounted for. So in a successful PB implementation, you'll have a process that is designed for the people. It's not your typical community outreach effort where you have a planning-led forum that tries to generate the kind of input that favors project outcomes. We don't have things already determined in a PB process. The sideboards you're talking about, though, are really important. And in a PB process, you have a community and government appointed steering committee that sets the parameters with government and community partnership. So if you want a PB process that's justice-oriented, that has climate outcomes, that meets the needs of people who have the highest needs or who have been left out, then projects that government and community develop together are bound by those criteria. So PB processes are still bound by some kind of criteria, and it's not just a free-for-all. But you will have people showing up who have high interest in something. And that's what we want. We want community experts. We want technical experts. We want people who live close to these issues to be able to shape project proposals and eventually the projects that get implemented.
Kind of on that note, can you take me through a little bit more detail on how, like, let's say a PB workshop would go, or like the initial steps that it takes, or once we had PB in place, like what would happen? I like how you said, and to correct me if I'm wrong, but people would essentially show up and you wouldn't be showing up to talk about anything that the government was already putting onto you. You would just basically show up and say, I want a community garden down the street or maybe a bike path over here. I'm going to see if anybody else is interested. And like, take me through how that might work though.
Sure. Dream with me a little bit. So like I said, PB will kick in if it passes in 2026. This gives us some time for the new form of government to get settled, to be able to staff all the proper areas that need the staffing, and to establish an office that can make a successful PB implementation happen. So like you said, we don't have some predetermined alternatives like you might have seen in transportation, like I might have seen in transportation, or that I've presented to the public in the past. So I'm acknowledging that oftentimes you have money carved out for a reason. Like, let's say it's the gas tax.
And Maria, I have to butt in because Maria knows it's so striking to me the difference from other places I've talked to you about when you were working at, let's say, the state of Oregon Transportation Department and how they would go about it. So you can really speak with some experience here on the difference between that and the PB model. So sorry, but go ahead.
No, I appreciate that tangent, that context is important. And you can probably see my enthusiasm about this because I really see it as an effective tool for the community, but also those who work in government, whether you are an elected official running for office or already in government as a planner or as an engineer. Participatory budgeting allows you to really put projects out there that people care about, that also research shows there's less backlash or people don't fight them because it is a community adopted project. And they were part of the process every step of the way. So like I said, we can dream a little bit. But before that, I will mention that we've already put a PB process in place in Oregon. Participatory Budgeting Oregon, the organization I represent, has implemented Youth Voice, Youth Vote PB in East Portland to Gresham to North Clackamas using federal COVID recovery funds. So the sideboards there, which is important to note, serving young people in the East Portland metro area who have the highest needs, whether it's low-income households, LGBTQ youth, unhoused, or houseless. And then the criteria around that is around economic justice, health, housing, art, and culture and recreation. So projects that were developed using that $500,000 of federal money have to fall within those categories. So the youth aren't fed projects like, hey, a soccer field or, you know, sexual health and reproductive services. No, they really spent over a year developing projects with experts to come up with projects that they want to be implemented in their Senate districts 24 and 25. So with PB in the city of Portland, we get to do the same thing.
But there's also something in the process, right? So that, let's say in that example where you have youth and you have a certain amount of money, if they wanted, you know, some snack food vending machines or something, like there's a process where in PB where there is a vetting of the projects, right? There's a way to take, it's not so, I could see a critic coming in and saying, well, of course you're going to, everybody's going to ask for just random things. And if it's their power to implement them, then they'll get them. And I don't like that because we have actually real needs and serious projects or whatever that we have to fund. So how do you make sure that the things that the people request have at least some measure of, you know, being vetted in terms of prioritization and stuff like that?
So if this really comes to life in the city of Portland, we start the PB process with that steering committee development stage. That's where government, community, they all work together to appoint people to come up with the rule book, which is the essential non-negotiable of any PB process in the world. You can look up rule books in the city of Seattle, in the city of New York, and all kinds of cities where PB is backed by real money. It's like tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars per cycle. So here in PB in Portland, we hope in 2026, we set that steering committee up. They come up with the rule book. And let's say they decide, let's do district-based PB in all districts versus citywide PB. That's something that they could decide. That's not in the ballot language, or it's not in the initiative petition language now. So that's something that could be up for decision. Or they could decide, hey, east of 82nd only for this first PB cycle. There's some learnings from PSEF on how to set up some of the parameters for a program. And we've learned from City of Boston, Seattle, and New York on how to write the PB process up and then how to help it evolve eventually. And then PSEF has also taught us how you can delegate power, what are the limitations, and who are the highest needs community. And that's how you can decide some of those project targets. And so we can imagine that in the city of Portland, let's say we focused on every district gets a pot of that $15 million, which could be exciting. Every district gets to have their own facilitators, maybe their own leadership body or steering committee. And then they attract assemblies of Portlanders to participate in a proposal development process. After collecting ideas about what kind of needs does their district have. So with that, I think the proposal development that a lot of people are concerned about is that you're going to come up with projects that aren't meaningful or that could be funded with other pots of money, which are legitimate concerns. Like, why would we fund, let's say, vending machines in schools if we know PPS already has a vending machine budget? So we create sideboards, we bring in all kinds of technical experts, whether it's, you know, water infrastructure people or transportation people or housing and homeless services experts. People really come here and help develop proposals with the community. And that's what's different than regular community engagement. We are teaching community members how much projects cost. They get to see, wow, a curb ramp is $40,000. Maybe we can't do $8,000 in 2 months. And people get to see the realistic side of project development, and they get to learn, and they get to take away their own expertise as well. So I think that's something that's different in PB proposal development that doesn't exist in regular community outreach or planning processes.
So you mentioned the Portland Clean Energy Fund, and it occurs to me that I feel like the way that that was created was almost like a step toward PB, because it was people getting together saying, hey, we have this need. They had to create and find a way to get the money from it. So they used a different mechanism than taking the city's general fund money to do that. But they essentially brought people that weren't typically at the table, let's say, and said, here's needs that aren't being met by current budgeting and all that sort of stuff. So let's make it happen. So is there something that you could say that looking at that clean energy fund process, can you talk about what you could learn based on the experience of the clean energy fund and doing PB in Portland more successfully?
It's no surprise that participatory budgeting and the Portland Clean Energy Fund are in the same conversation. You might recall that last year, Portland City Council adopted the Climate Investment Plan. And that was groundbreaking. We got to outline 5 years of priorities in there on how to spend PSEF money. Even in one segment of the plan, you'll find climate-friendly schools, which has a component of PB built into it. And that was a huge win. I think for PB advocates, especially the youth who came to testify and push that in, I think that's a win for us. We have yet to see how that will be implemented, but it does show that there's interest of young people being able to drive the kind of outcomes they want to see in PSEF, because they are highly affected by climate change. Some of the population that's most affected. So we can't ignore youth power in PSEF, and I hope it continues to grow. But what we have learned in PSEF, the design is awesome as it was, and it's urgent and necessary. And I'm in the camp of protecting and preserving it for climate and clean energy only. So if you haven't seen that quote in the Oregonian, let me just reiterate, we have to keep the integrity intact, and we have to make sure we preserve every dollar we can for climate and clean energy. There's no such thing as we are having too much money for climate change and climate action. I think many of the advocates you know and the people who read Bike Portland care about making sure we meet our sustainable transportation goals. And PSEF could be one of the avenues we do that. With that aside, Portland Clean Energy Fund follows more of a community grant-making model, which is not participatory budgeting. Mm-hmm. It's I think there's a lot of conversations about PB that ends up incorporating things that are not PB or misassociating things with PB. But PSEF does have a lot of the components around criteria and sideboards, moving forward community leaders, like a committee that was part of the code. But it does not secure allocations in the very beginning that are for a direct decision-making process by the people. We know PSEF has all kinds of revenue overages and unexpected revenue growth, but none of it has been carved out for direct decision-making by the people. And had the initial PSEF ballot measure been written like that, then it would be more of a PB process where, let's say, out of every cycle of PSEF or every tax filing, you capture $30 million just for the people deciding, not a committee, not bureaus, but the people get to come up with their own projects and programs. PSEF still relies heavily on nonprofit organizations putting forward proposals, but PB really appeals to those who are not affiliated with organizations, people who want to learn about all kinds of issues in Portland, but don't want to attach themselves or cannot attach themselves to a specific issue or organization. So this allows them to participate meaningfully in all types of priority areas and not just transportation because they're affiliated with a transportation nonprofit. So I think PB really opens it up to people who are not affiliated. And one of my favorite parts is that people can vote in a PB process without having the legal rights to vote. Mm. So PB all over the world, particularly in American cities, has had an inclusive way of being able to include folks who are less likely to participate in other forms of civic engagement. And it really opens up people who have barriers to doing that representative democracy option of voting. So they cannot elect their elected officials, but they can vote in a PB process. They can come develop projects. They can work with nonprofits and government to come up with projects that they care about.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that will be seeing this on Bike Portland who will have projects in mind and, you know, hopefully someday go to one of these meetings and be able to get it written up on the board and become an actual thing. Or tell me how, just speaking selfishly here from the transportation lens, what would the expectation be? Would I be able to go to a meeting and basically advocate for a specific project and then it would end up becoming funded? Or like, is there a way you can share a little bit more detail about how something goes from an idea to an actual funded project?
Community budgeting in PB means perpetual community power. And that means being able to step into a process that is designed for everybody to be able to participate. You can expect that meetings won't be full of technical information right off the bat. They're not going to expect you to know jargon or the history of the housing system or zoning or the education system in Portland. There's going to be spaces where there's a lot of listening. PB facilitators are expected to be skilled at being able to entertain and engage people who are not comfortable in other spaces that have been going on in Portland to plan and to decide. So if someone does have a transportation idea that they care about, one that comes up a whole lot in spaces I'm in, keeping cars from approaching the school at a close distance and being able to save local streets for walking and biking safely and not dealing with the commotion of drop-offs and pickups of SUVs confronting their children at forehead height. So if there was appetite to create some kind of street environment that PBOT says is could be feasible, you work with PBOT, community orgs, parents, schools, everyone who can engage in this process or who is invited to engage, they can design a proposal like that together. That doesn't guarantee that the proposal will win, but a PB process can design dozens of proposals if there's appetite and interest around that. So if a PB process is well-funded and well-facilitated, maybe you can bump the proposal number up to 30 or 50. But an idea like safe sidewalk spaces around schools, that proposal can actually make it pretty far. Mm. If PBOT says, hey, let's imagine what that will cost. What kind of policies do we have to address? What kind of engagement do we need to do with neighbors? How much personnel do we need to reinforce or enforce that on the street Monday through Friday? Let's dream of every cost. And that's what the community gets to do. They get to see what that full project proposal process could be like. So if there are tons of proposals like that, transportation and safety, which I know are really important, the public then gets to come and see all the proposals that are developed at the end of that phase. Then they enter the voting stage. And you might have a ranked choice voting system. PV process also gets to decide what kind of voting structure you need or want. Do you vote for multiple projects until you run out of 15 million? Mm. Or do you just accept the top three projects and just move on from there? It just really depends. But again, that steering committee in the beginning with government and community gets to decide what could be feasible for the city. So that's a little bit of it, but we're going to need more conversations to talk about the technical aspects of PB. I really just want to leave the message and impression with people that this is community power in a way that continues to bring people in year after year. PB is meant to be consistent and not a one-time thing. We got to brush off the whole pilot notion. We know that pilot sometimes mean that it's meant to be done once and the political will is not there, that project will not stay. We need to have lasting projects that community members care about, and we need city government to support that. And it's also possible for community members to put forward a proposal year after year if it's that popular, or at some point just say, hey, make this a five-year project or program. And sometimes bureaus like PBOT, if they see how popular it is, they might just say, hey, forget putting this in the PB process. Let's invest in it in our annual budget. Mm. And I think this does the work of community engagement for them, and it gives them the confidence to implement a project that has widespread support. And that's what PB does sometimes. Even the losing projects mm-hmm. get adopted by bureaus. They get adopted by nonprofits. Foundations want to fund it. Maybe the state government will see some promise, whether it's the Oregon Health Authority or Oregon Department of Transportation. And it just takes on a life of its own. But PB demonstrates community engagement, community power in a way that doesn't exist in current planning processes.
Cool. So it's almost like a free focus group for the city or state agencies to find out what people really are excited about in a way.
But yeah. It's a helpful tool for them.
Yeah.
And they benefit. And this is what I said. We talk a lot about how this benefits community members, but I love to talk about how it can benefit those of us who are plangineers or public health people or school district directors. I think being able to witness this and be part of it, it's really powerful. And this is why some cities really, once they put PB into place, it just becomes part of their democracy from here on out.
Cool. That's really exciting. If people want to know more about this, what's a way they can plug in? What do they need to know right now about what's happening locally in Portland on this?
Talk with Next Up and Participatory Budgeting Oregon. Go to communitybudgetingforall.com. The website is live. Check out all our endorsements. Check out our pitch. There's something for everybody in Community Budgeting for All. And what I personally like about it is in a PB process, you don't end up with highway projects. You come up with projects that are at the community scale, some even larger scale, or some that you could scale up. People really put forward projects in this process that have never been funded in the past, but should have. It addresses community safety, basic needs and all kinds of things that might have been overlooked. And I also want to give a shout out to the nonprofits too, because there's a place for them in this. They can engage in this. They're going to be part of the experts who come up with these assembly panels, and they help develop projects with government to make feasible, implementable projects happen. We hope you join the campaign, whether you endorse it as a community member, as an organization, or a small business, or a large business. Check it out. I think you'll enjoy the company that you're in. We also have opportunities to volunteer. We need signature gatherers who can show up to farmers markets and other public spaces where people deserve to hear about this. We also have paid opportunities for signature gathering from $22 to $80 an hour, depending on the amount you can work and how successful you are on sidewalks and street corners. So there's a way to plug in. We'll look for ambassadors too. If you enjoy being able to talk about tools for direct democracy and how much you love Portland and why we need this now, you're going to want to join on board, and you'll be supported through this journey to be able to engage with your friends and neighbors and other people who can vote and get this on the ballot.
Cool. I really appreciate you sharing this with us, Maria. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That was Maria Sippen with the Community Budgeting for All campaign. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please make sure to subscribe and leave a comment and tell your friends about it, and make sure you don't miss any future episodes. Really appreciate all of your support. If you are not a paid subscriber of Bike Portland yet, please become one today at bikeportland.org/support and find out how you can be a part of what we're doing here and pay a little bit in to keep it thriving and surviving. I also want to thank Brock Dittus of Sprocket Podcast fame for our wonderful new theme music. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, we'll see you in the streets.